This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, good Sunday morning.
Good Sunday morning to you. As we always talk about, this is the best time of year in Missoula. And we enjoy our time here during the lead into the winter.
We do.
Unfortunately, today's topic is a little bit of a serious one, and we have to have those every once in a while.
Totally.
And we're going to have a group on that's going to talk about human trafficking, you know, an issue that's important. It's been highlighted because of the Epstein files and, you know, and the involvement of well-recognized and highly, you know, educated and well-known people in escapades with children. You know, I mean,
right.
You don't want to call them young women or young men. They're children. Some of them are 13, 14, 15 years old.
Right.
And as you know, I've had a early history of mine in my early career. I used to run runaway shelters, and I worked with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and I was on the board of the National Juvenile Law Center at Washington University in St. Louis, and helped fund the National Runaway Hotline. And so I had a lot of work in this, and it's sad that so many years later, it's still a big problem and in some ways a growing problem.
Yeah, and I think we know this to be true, but it really is magnified here in a state like Montana, a very transient, right off of I-90,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the interstates, when I was running my first runaway shelters I ran, were at a crossroad of two interstates,
right,
in Ohio. And then you were getting a lot of kids that were, you know, running away or being exploited and escaping that would, you know, get on the highway and try to, you know, they get stopped by the police or
right.
They're at a truck stop and they get identified. And we, you know, the first runaway shelter I had, we had over 300 children in it the first year.
Oh, my God.
You know, and it's a growing problem and it's a global problem. And it kind of shape shifts on a global basis.
Right.
Because it would be surprising, I think, to most of our listeners to know that on a global basis, human trafficking, about 57% of the people that are trafficked are men.
I couldn't believe that when you mentioned that in our pre-production.
It's because of economic human trafficking. They're used to transport arms across borders. They're used as drug mules.
Right.
You know, they sign contracts in countries where, you know, where there's economic, you know, depression, and they sign these multi-year contracts and get shipped abroad to work in, you know, low-wage, you know, heavy lifting kind of jobs. They're all over the Middle East. One time I was in the Middle East and picked up the newspaper, and they had all pages of people who had run away from their jobs. They had been brought to Saudi Arabia to do construction
work.
That's
what they mean by slave labor.
Yes, exactly what it is. Slave labor. There's even people brought into places like China who are slave laborers, you know, and we sometimes see it every day. You might walk in a small town to a, you know, a Chinese restaurant or an Asian restaurant, and the kitchen and the help don't speak a word of English, and they're there, and you wonder how they get there.
Right.
And I can tell you how they get this. They sign up. They come from a small village. They sign a contract in order to get some money for their family, and then they ship them off somewhere to work, and they're stuck. You know, they don't know the language. They're being managed. You know, so there's more than just the sexual abuse. You know, and the lurid stories, which, you know, are certainly valid, of, you know, pimps and hustlers.
Right.
You know, picking up girls at truck stops and putting them into massage parlors or using them as prostitutes. I mean, that all certainly happens. But the bigger picture of, you know, economic human trafficking, along with, you know, the kind that we just alluded to, is a global problem. Probably 28 million people globally that are involved in this, and in the United States, a lot less. They don't know, and maybe particularly on the girls being human trafficked, and maybe only 12 or 14,000. That's still a lot of people to be concerned about. And today we have
Lowell Hockhalter from the Lifeguard Group.
Lifeguard Group to come and talk about what they're doing here in Montana to try to intervene and get these children out of harm's way and back on a pathway of of a decent life.
Yeah, and in true, you know, Missoula community fashion, are one of my friends and a really strong community supporter, Lenore Bear from Bear Concrete and Excavation, is going to join us. She's actually working in partnership with a lifeguard group to raise funds in this important time. Anyway, when we come back, we'll be joined by Lowell and Lenore. Back after these words. Arnie Sherman, we are back with Lenore Bear and Lowell Hochhalter from the Lifeguard Group.
Lenore, Lowell, it's a pleasure to have you here today. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank
you. Doing great, thank you.
So for our listeners that don't know what the Lifeguard Group is and think that you're, you know, pool monitors,
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because on my LinkedIn, oftentimes I get inquiries about folks that would like to apply to be a lifeguard.
I would imagine.
And my reply is always, well, we're not the type of lifeguards you're probably looking for necessarily. Right. The Lifeguard Group, we formed almost 8 years ago, and it's an organization, a nonprofit organization that has been set up to eradicate human trafficking.
And is it just Montana-based?
Well, we're based in Montana, but we do work all over the country.
And is that because referrals come from all over the country?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, referrals come not only from all over the country, but overseas. And we've worked some overseas, but the majority does bring us back home. And really, it's why we formed the Lifeguard Group. My wife and I, Tammy, we've been involved in the anti-trafficking movement for 15 years. We started working with an organization based in New Jersey and then moved to Las Vegas. But we begin to realize that those that we were finding, those victims, survivors, we were finding them in major metropolitan areas, whether that be at the Super Bowl or big conventions that we were targeting. Those victims weren't coming from those large metropolitan areas. They were coming from rural, small rural communities, mm-hmm. like I grew up in eastern Montana. And so mm-hmm. we really wanted to address that and try to shut the front door on that and bring some prevention and understanding and still incorporate the rescue and the recovery piece right. of that too.
So you and your wife do this full time?
Yes.
What did you do before this?
Well, I started as a youth pastor, actually here in Missoula. I was at Christian Life Center. Mm-hmm. And then I started traveling doing school assembly programs. And I loved working with students and I loved speaking. And so I began speaking in schools, kind of bringing a character-based assembly. Don't quit, you know, anti-suicide, anti-drugs, with a motivational story and bend to it. And then beginning to hear a lot of things from students change as the process went on. It wasn't just kids at the end of an assembly bringing up, you know, here's a pack of cigarettes, I need to stop this, or here's a suicide note, I'm not going to do that anymore. And the story began to change. And we begin to delve into the rapid decline of, I guess, societal norms that were beginning to happen with students. And we begin to ask ourselves a lot of questions. And I can tell you, this is not a field that I would have chosen for myself, really.
It chose you.
It really did, yeah.
So how big is this problem?
Well, it is big. You know, and I always tell people, don't get caught up in the statistics, because when we do that, It takes our focus off of what this really is. We're talking about people. We're talking about young boys, young girls, women, men. And the statistics are important, yes, because it gives us a context. You know, right now, over 50 million people around the world are being trafficked, and that increases rapidly. Right now, it's the second leading criminal enterprise in the world today.
Right.
And it's not going to be long, and it'll overtake drug trafficking is number one, just because of the sheer numbers and the revenue that can be brought in from it.
Sure. I mentioned in the intro a little bit about the combination of forced labor as a big part of it globally. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, if you travel, I've lived in 100 countries. I've seen it almost everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and serving as drug mules or arms traders or using, you know, human person power that is slave labor essentially is a big part of it. And of course, then you have, which, you know, the thing that, that, you know, shocks people even more than that, and that should be shocking enough, is the, you know, commercial sex exploitation part of it.
Yeah.
You know, which involves both children and young men and young women.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it, it doesn't discriminate whether it's, it doesn't discriminate ethnically. There's no border that is stopping it. It's across the board. You know, we're seeing a lot come into the United States now with organ trafficking, where they're taking young children, you know, for their organs. And again, like you mentioned, it's horrific to even think about. Nobody wants to think about this. But that's really why we are in the situation we are in the world today, is because nobody has thought about it. And what makes human trafficking so diabolical is that it doesn't have to be hidden underground. It, what makes it diabolical is that it's hidden right in front of us.
Right.
And there's that human part of us that wants to look the other way. And that's what we've done for far too long. And it's time for us to pay attention.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, you be candid and honest about it. You know, every small town has, you know, a massage parlor, or it has, you know, some kind of restaurant where no one speaks English. And you always, you're sitting there, you wonder how all these people got to where they are.
Yeah.
And then you just go back and enjoy your meal. But there's stories behind a lot of that. And I'm not saying that all of that's legal or illegal, but parts of all that have to be, you know, done in an untoward and a, you know, a criminal way.
Oh, for sure. You know, you look at, you know, across the board, whether it's labor trafficking, sexual exploitation, whether it be children, whether it be adults, the growth shows us that it's not by accident. And but it does show us that we have lost in our culture, especially the Western culture, we have lost the sense of community.
Right.
And we have bought into this, what I call a false mantra that says, mind your own business. And really what that is an excuse to not take action.
Sure.
Well, I also think the economic disparity that you're starting to see become even wider.
Well, as a kid growing up in New York, and you grew up there too.
Right.
You walk past, you know, basically, you know, the bus stop, the bus station downtown,
right.
You could see pimps and hustlers hanging around waiting for the buses to come in from Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
So they could, you know, see if there was somebody that could
take
advantage of.
We used to say this, Port Authority, Penn Station, Santa Monica, the Santa Monica Pier. I always say the end of the road for a lot of, like, major thoroughfares. That's where you see so much.
Yes. Yeah.
But now we're in Montana. We're in a state that's, what do they say? It's a big, small town with long roads.
Yeah.
Right? So it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And we live on a I-90, I-15. Yeah. These are major thoroughfares. How much does that impact?
Well, that plays a huge role in the demographic, I guess. You know, when you look at, yes, we sit on the I-90 corridor. We sit on the 93 corridor, which connects, again, Idaho and Canada. And on that corridor, you've got, you know, the huge tourist attraction, whether it be Flathead Lake, whether it be Glacier Park, then you have Yellowstone Park. Every year we see a huge increase in activity during tourist season when, you know, and I'm not sure of all the numbers of, you know, what the tourist numbers are. I'm sure there's somebody that keeps track of all 12 that.
12 million.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not.
Not
it's
that
not,
I keep track of it, but it's roughly about 12 million.
You know, it's not
year.
All the savory people that are coming in just to look at Yellowstone Park and Glacier
Park. Right, and 15 goes all the way from the southern border to the northern border.
Absolutely.
You know, and so there's a lot of activity going on there. And you mentioned, I think, a very important point, which is you could be in Las Vegas or you could be in New York or Chicago, but the victims of all of this don't come from there generally.
No.
They come from a lot of other places.
Right.
Absolutely.
So how do you – are you part of a national network, a national communications network for this? Is there a national hotline? Is that how referrals are made? Or how does all of the input into, you know, the system work, or the intake into the system work?
Yeah, and it as you look across the board, there is a national human trafficking hotline, and there's actually been a major shift with that in the last month and a half. It changed the organization.
Right, it changed from Polaris Group to
Collective. Yeah,
to, yeah, the Was it Compass Connections?
Compass Connections, yes. Yeah. And so, you know, that's gonna cause a little bit of upheaval for us too, as they get their feet underneath them and get that changed. But, you know, even with that, you know, the national hotline when Polaris had it was based out of New Jersey.
Right.
Well, when information, if somebody in Montana were to call that hotline, that goes to New Jersey. Well, by the time that information was getting back to a resource in Montana, sometimes it would be 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
And
they're gone.
If that's a survivor or a victim at the truck stop at the Y or in Bonner or in Butte, whatever it might be, they're gone.
Yeah, they're
They've
long
moved
gone.
Along to where their ads are placed online
right.
to the next stop. And so we started the Montana Human Trafficking Hotline based on that. That sole need of we need a quicker recidivism piece to get to close that gap as best as we can.
Right.
So, yes, we get referrals. We do connect with other organizations that are doing the same thing we are across the country.
Right.
And, you know, right now, you know, we have a safe house here in Western Montana that we opened 2 years ago. From the day we were open until now, we're full. We've got a waiting list of 20. And it's across the board. There's about maybe 2,000 beds available across the country, which is, when you look at the numbers, you know, we're talking about close to maybe 3 million victims here in the United States. Well, so what if we did rescue them all? So what then?
Where do they go?
You know?
Right.
And so, you know, the communication, we try our best. And, you know, like for us, it's heartbreaking. My staff knows, like our case manager knows, she can't go on vacation because if Lowell answers the phone and a victim's calling, like, yeah, we'll find a place for you. And then she comes back from vacation and finds out we've put up an extra bed somewhere. And she's like, you know, I it's heartbreaking to tell somebody we're full. We don't have room. And it's, to me, I can't take those calls because
Right. Talk a little bit about your organization. How many people are you in the lifeguard group?
There's 8 of us on staff.
8. Okay, got it.
We've got a massive group of volunteers that help. We've got a volunteer group of women mentors. So our safe house is for adult women, 18 and over. And it would surprise people the age disparity that we have. We've had the youngest that we've had at our house has been 18, and the oldest we've had is 63.
Mm-hmm. That's a big range.
Wow.
You talk about a network of volunteers. Laura, you're a volunteer, right? I mean, in a sense.
I guess so.
Absolutely.
So what's your relationship to the lifeguard group?
So I started to get involved with the lifeguard group a couple of years ago. Someone actually, a very good friend of ours, sent me a link to the Sentinel Project, which was the awareness campaign that you partnered with Summit
Montana
Beverage.
Beer and Wine Distributors.
Okay. Oh yeah. And said, oh, watch this. It's a really super cool YouTube video about the Sentinel Project. And so that was actually my first introduction to the lifeguard group. And so soon after that, I went to a lunch and learn that you held downtown at the bank. And I got to see that was so impressive to just sit in that group of people. There was maybe 100 people there in attendance, and you showed a slideshow that we watched, and all the different things about who this organization was, and so it was at that time just really impressed upon my heart to like know more, learn more, do more, and so I guess as the past couple years, I've been educating myself on the lifeguard group. Giving to them financially, spreading awareness. And now I just, within the past year, my husband and I just both feel like this burning desire to just help the general public just be more aware of who they are, who they stand for, and the amazing selfless work that this organization is doing.
And what do you do in your real life when you're not passionately involved in this?
So my husband Wendell, He's amazing. He's not here because
his amazing wife is here instead.
But he, we own Bear Concrete and Excavation here in Missoula.
That's cement, right?
That's concrete.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I said that on purpose.
We went to this last year.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, we've been in business here 23 years in Missoula and the surrounding communities.
Originally from where?
Calgary, Alberta.
Hello, Canada.
Yes.
Yes, and Wendell, too. He was born in Vancouver, B.C. I have to just throw that in.
Good. Well, you're the quintessential, you know, volunteer community person that every organization needs a plethora of.
Mm-hmm,
I want to get back to something you mentioned, which you touched on. There are lots of online advertisements advertising for I'm in town, I'm at the truck stop, I'll be here for the night, anybody wants to. That must really infuriate you when you see these. And what can you do about it? Because, you know, there's a reasonable chance that the person who's doing that is being trafficked to do that.
Oh, absolutely. I would say 95%.
So what is the police department, what do you do? When you see these ads popping up and they say, I'm down at the Y, you know, for the next 24 hours, what happens?
Well, there is, you know, in Western Montana especially, and I would confidently say across the state of Montana, our law enforcement involvement and awareness and training has been incredible across the board. I'm very confident in law enforcement in the state of Montana and the steps they've taken, whether that's starting in the academy and local agencies. There's an FBI task force, human trafficking task force here in Montana, and they monitor those as well and are looking, and, you know, there's stings and different things like that that they do operations. We monitor those sites as well. We do truck stop. We call them truck stop outreach, where we will, you know, send people across the state of Montana and sit at weather hot spots, and we'll look and see what we can find. And, of course, you know, we don't jump in and involve ourselves as a first responder. We try to be the eyes and ears for law enforcement. Hey, this is what we're seeing. We will write up a report, send that to them.
Right.
Or if we see something immediately, well, we'll call them out as quick as we can.
Well, you had said you're eight people. What are the eight people doing? I'm curious. Like, how many are involved in the case management, training, et cetera?
Yeah, so we have a full-time case manager that and her job is, it's over
very
the top.
Broad.
It's very broad. I mean, she runs the lives of the residents of our safe house and those that come to us that we don't necessarily have room for.
Is she a social worker? Or
No, just a case manager. And then we have a full-time therapist that works with our survivors. We have an in-home manager. We have a direct services coordinator. We have an operations manager, because our safe house is actually a working 40-acre working ranch. And then my wife and myself. My wife is the development director. In other words, I get to dream up the ideas, and then it's kind of like our personal life. I dream up the ideas and tell her to find some money and write the check
Tammy
for
has
it.
To make them come to fruition.
Yeah.
That's how everyone's house works.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which makes for an interesting dynamic, as you know, working as a husband and wife. But I think we've done a pretty decent
always,
job.
As always. Well, you know, you had, just to put a fine point on training and you know, that aspect of it, for the average person who's stopping and putting gas in their car and going to buy a pack of Luckies, how do they know what to look for? Like when they're in like a parking lot or talk about that if you would.
Yeah, that's a great scenario and a very common scenario if you're at a truck stop across the state of Montana or anywhere else. I always tell people, if you want to be on alert, don't go in the front door of the truck stop like you normally would. Pull around and come in the back door where truckers would come in. And because it gets, you know, it's closer to where their showers or restrooms are. And if you walk in that truck stop door, and you see a young girl standing there, it's the middle of February, she's got high heels on, a short skirt, and a crop top, something inside of you says, that doesn't fit here. And you've got the choice to say, well, none of my business, not a big, you know. Or you've got the opportunity to just step up and say, hey, is everything all right? Something seems out of place here. Well, you know, I don't want to get involved. Well, somebody needs to get involved, and somebody needs to ask some questions. And it's really not difficult to do. or at least make awareness and then call a hotline.
It's not difficult, but it's complicated because you have a business that's being run there, the truck stop.
Yeah.
And they don't want to drive away their customers.
Right.
Not that they're
right.
That not that they want to promote illegal activity, right. But you know, they don't want to drive away their customers. You have the girl who's or boy who has a monitor or a pimp or somebody that's managing them.
Yeah.
And you got that. You have customers who have seen an ad and maybe are interested in you know, soliciting a service. You got all that going on, and somebody who is not oriented or trained or doesn't know what to do, it's the inertia pretty much is to say, you know, maybe I should say something to somebody here or you walk out and you know, talk about it.
Yeah. Well, I always tell people, if you don't know what to do, do something. Yeah. Whether it's go to the counter and say, something's not right there. Somebody needs to pay attention. Call the hotline.
Right. Call 911.
Call 911.
Do like the town pumps of the world, whoever the Travel America, do they have, you know, signage to say, to alert people to say, if you're, something doesn't look right, like here's a number to call?
Yeah. You know, a lot of the truck stops across Montana have our hotline in the restrooms.
In the stalls, even in the women's restroom.
In the every rest stop. Rest area in Montana has the number. Every MVD, Motor Vehicle Department, where you go to get your driver's license, they publish that hotline on their screens. And the number's getting out there. We've seen an increase every year in the calls that we get. This year was very intriguing because it was when I say this year, our 2024 report, we had more calls from actual victims than we had ever had. So that means they're now seeing the number. And so instead of somebody calling on behalf of somebody else or this is what I saw, actual victims were calling the number.
And that's important.
Very important. Absolutely.
You know, Arnie, one other question I have. Sure. Is there a profile of the perpetrator of this, of somebody who is trafficking people that we can look out for?
Is
it organized or is it?
Some, yes. And I know this is hard for some people to wrap their brains around because we are Montana. I get that we are. I'm a Montana native. I'm a Sydney, Montana boy. And I'm proud of the state that we live in.
Right.
Proud of the state that I call home. But to be ignorant enough to say when you hear that the cartel has moved into Montana and say, nah, this is Montana, is completely ignorant and ridiculous because
the mafia is involved in this.
Absolutely. Sure. But then the number one avenue of human trafficking in the state of Montana and a lot of our rural states is what we call familial trafficking. So they're being trafficked by their own family.
Right.
And
an uncle
again,
who's
right,
has a fentanyl problem or drug addicted, needs money. I mean, it's a common thing. Early in my career, I ran runaway shelters and halfway houses for ex-cons. And I ran them in Ohio and in Chicago. I had the largest network of foster homes for runaways in the country. We had 200 beds that we were operating. And in many cases, it was very dangerous work.
Yeah.
I was 24 years old. I had a pimp come in who was wanting, you know, to get the girl.
Yeah.
What are you doing taking my girl? And pulled a gun out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I mean that's not what you normally run into when you're working with, you know, abused or neglected kids or kids that are being trafficked, and sometimes it's not just clearly tracked. As you mentioned, it could be a family member who's exploiting a child. They're not taking them to another state.
Right.
They're not moving them out of the country or in the country. They're using them in, you know, the local area to you know, to make money for them.
Yeah.
You know, and so it becomes complicated to deal with, and you've taken on a responsibility that I give you a lot of credit for, but you also have to have, as you know, staff that are trained and understand how to deal with this and interface with the police, with the business owners, you know, with the schools, with school. I mean, that whole network is involved in
absolutely
this because a lot of it is locally based. I'm sure you have dealings with the reses in the state.
Yeah,
there's a lot of this going on in the Native American community as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you see the MMIW, MMIP stuff, and we've tried to build relationships with our tribal communities across the state. And I don't think we're the only organization, but we've had fantastic dealings. Not only are we horrified by it, the tribe themselves. I mean, this is family.
Right.
And
that's what the tribe is, a
exactly.
family.
And so I know it was, you know, people were telling us, well, you got to be careful. You know, you're not Native American, and we haven't had any of that.
No,
there's not been one iota of that.
Let's do a quick ID. Our guests are Lowell Hockhalter with the Lifeguard Group and Lenore Bear with Bear Concrete and Excavation, who is supporting the Lifeguard Group. Arnie.
Lenore, so what is your involvement now in the organization? I mean, you've been, you know, emotionally connected to it for the last few years. You know, you and your husband are now even more inclined to think about this and make it part of your lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so where do you see that going?
I just see it growing. Hopefully they'll take me. Getting back to the listeners that weren't on in the beginning,
yes.
You had mentioned, Lowell, how, like, with the name the Lifeguard Group, you've had actual lifeguards reach out and
yeah,
be like,
right.
hey, we want to be a lifeguard.
Right.
Just a short little on that is this summer, our daughter, Alexis, she came home from college for the summer. And she's a psych major, a senior in college, and a psych major. And she was able to become a survivor support intern. So she got to work at the safe house this summer. And I was amazed the amount of people, prominent people here in Missoula, that I would talk to that would say, oh, where's Lexi working this summer? And I'd said, we were so proud of this. I said, mm-hmm. oh, she's working for the lifeguard group. Like, she's going to be a support intern. You know, it goes hand in hand with her psych major. She's getting credits, and she loves it.
Right.
She loves these girls. And I was amazed the amount of people that said, oh, I didn't know she was a swimmer.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I would say, I mean, literally, this happened to me probably 10 times this summer. I mean,
right.
around town at the country club, at places where people,
right.
I would thought, they should know this. So, but people immediately thought, oh, she must be, and I would then explain. And so I think that's what sort of got this campaign for this October, or this,
right.
it's not October, it's now November.
Yeah.
But this holiday season, we want to do a campaign,
right.
where we want to really raise awareness.
Right.
I feel like the number one priority right now is so that more people in the general public know who the lifeguard group, hear the name,
right.
maybe look it up, and just get them some better, greater exposure over the radio,
right.
and just to who that they're not a swimming.
And you're
group.
Gonna be and you're gonna be matching donations, so that's the
yes.
big thing. That's a big deal.
Yes, we
it's
are.
A huge
yes.
thing.
Talk
yes.
about that for a second. Someone
so,
talk about that, because
so, yeah,
that's something
people... So we're just excited to do that. So, of course, we did one last year for another organization, and it was very successful. And so
right.
I reached out to Scott here a couple months ago already and said we would like to do one this year for the Lifeguard Group. So it's been in the works, and we're going to run it from Thanksgiving Day through New Year's Eve. And so we're just hoping that the community joins with us. And just
you're going to come back on the air to some of the other stations too to talk about this. We'll do that as we go into the month,
into
December. See, one thing that we can so nice about Missoula, and I'm sure it's other communities around Montana, people have a sense of purpose and a sense of commitment to these types of organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the work you're doing, Lowell, how do you fundraise, or how do you look for, you know, folks to be supportive?
Right. Didn't
of
some
mission.
Of the early money come from the Gianforte Foundation?
Yeah, when we bought the safe house and the property, the Gianforte Family Foundation heard about us. And I mean, it, you know, back when I was doing schools, we had a nonprofit as well. And man, if I'd get a donation of $1,000 or $2,000, man, I'd go home to my wife and be like, look at this. I mean, we're rolling in it. Well, when you buy a facility like we have and you fund that, every piece of, you know, the survivors and our residents' lives, you realize $2,000 is gone in half a day.
Right.
And so to have the Gianforte family approached us, and they helped us pay down half the debt of owning that property, which just blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have just kind of based our principle in as far as raising funds is just building relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I want their heart before I want their money.
Right.
I want them, number one, to understand what this is about. They're literally transforming lives with their dollars,
sure,
with their volunteer hours.
So people can volunteer at
the safe house?
They can.
Yeah.
Okay. And so there's not an anonymity to the people that are housed there?
Obviously, there's, you know, protocols that we take.
Right.
There's background checks vetted and things like that. Yeah.
What's the duration that someone spends? How long do they usually spend there? What's the...
As far as a resident?
Yes.
Well, we're a bit of an anomaly. And running homes, you understand, right, what that is. The typical safe house stay across the country is 2 weeks to 90 days.
Wow.
But, you know, as we looked at things, we're seeing the average trafficked individual will return to that life 7 to 8 times. And a lot of the reason behind that is because there's no equipping. Okay, so we're going to bring you in for 2 weeks or 90 days. We're going to help you therapeutically, take care of some medical issues. Well, okay, you're good now. Out you go. Well, I got to find a place to live.
Right.
Go where?
I'm separated from my family because, of course, the family is where it starts a lot of times. I have no job skills. And so they just turn back to what they've always known. And so we've determined that we have no end cap as far as time. The average stay for us is a year plus.
Wow.
And because we want to walk them through that journey of career education and helping them find stable housing, which, though, when I say that in the city of Missoula, everybody, you know, hand to forehead, like, who isn't, right?
Right.
So
how many beds are there?
So right now we have 6 beds, and we are currently in the process of finishing another building, which will help us with 4 more beds.
And they're all women at this point.
Yeah, all
women. What happens when a guy comes to you?
Well, funny you mentioned that. I just had a, what would I call that? An opportunity. Let's call it that. I just had an opportunity in the last 2 days. A young man came up to me, heard us present what we do, and he hung around, and I'm getting good enough at this and done it long enough to where I knew there was something behind it. And I always tell people, you know, you'd ask about what are the signs. The number one sign is the gut feeling.
Mm-hmm.
The gut feeling that says something's off here. And we all have it. Mm-hmm. It speaks to all of us.
It's your intuition.
And it's being willing to take the next step and say, how do I believe what that voice says? And now let that voice lead you in what the next step is. But this young man came up. There was a group of people around. We had an information table. And he stayed there until everybody left. And he looked at me and he said, yeah, I'm one of those people you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And he goes, what's there for me? And I said, oh, there's something for you. And we walked through, and we're looking for referrals of places. Now, we talk about only 2,000 beds. When we look across the country, resources that are there for men or boys who've been trafficked are very minimal.
Sure.
Maybe 15 beds. Yeah. And so we're working hard to try and find something for them.
In the whole state?
No, across the country.
15?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
When we were doing the program in Chicago,
yeah,
we could not get any momentum behind building houses.
Yeah,
you know, you couldn't get neighborhoods that would accept them in, no matter what. You know, no matter what you told them, they didn't want the pimps hanging around. They didn't want the, you know, they didn't want the girls, and, you know, they just didn't want them. So we put together a network of foster homes.
Yeah,
people that would take them in, and we were able to get 200 families around Chicago. So we always had capacity beyond, I mean, I know it's very frustrating, six beds.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's something in Montana that you can look into, you probably already have, as can you find 20 people around the state or 30 people that for a few nights at least until you can figure out what you can do, they can get them out of the situation at least and try to figure out a pathway forward. And then maybe there's a way to refer them to a facility in another state or somewhere else. Because as you mentioned, we ran into that problem too. The problem doesn't solve itself in 5 days or 7 days. But at least you want to get them out of the crisis situation that they found themselves in. And you want to reward them for having the guts to step away from the situation, the threatening, life-threatening situation they have found themselves in.
Yeah. You know, Arnie, it's funny you mentioned that because we received a phone call this last spring from a family member that said that his sister had called and he didn't quite understand the situation she was in. And of course, he was in a sense of shock because she had been missing for 40 years and she got away, finally found
away after
what it was inside of her that needed to come alive. And she got away and reached out. And thank God she had a family that she could reach out to. And we were able to step in that situation. But so often, you know, there is that misunderstanding of, well, we don't want that around our neighbor. We don't need that trouble. Well, there's no trouble. These are just broken people looking for not just a handout. They're looking for an opportunity for life.
Right. Scott, this is something that the Lifetime Network could fund. They run a show a month like this,
right? I know.
About somebody who's been kidnapped and, you know, forced to do stuff and, you know.
Arnie, so crazy about this is we spoke with, Mountain Home, Montana, a couple of weeks ago, a couple months ago, actually.
Yeah.
Watson Children's Shelter.
Right.
Right. The theme, the Innocence Project.
Right.
I mean, it's sad, but every folks that we've been talking to lately, especially, it's been highlighted and magnified. There's such a need for this.
Well,
for people to help each other.
It's also in a society that's focused on billionaires, you know, and the Kardashian family. And that's what's on TV. These are mostly economic crimes.
Sure.
I mean, that's what they are. Trafficking the woman to make money.
That. Yeah.
You know, or the person gets involved because they're in a financial situation. It's not always, you know, slavery in that sense. They're not grabbed from another country for no reason. There's economic reasons. They're reaching out and looking at any way they can survive, and they're vulnerable. They pick the most vulnerable people to get involved in this.
That was my next question, which is, what condition are people coming to you in?
Like, rough. Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little?
Sure. You know, we've tried very hard to be, and I'm not educated enough to use this word, but we've tried our very hardest to be a holistic, well-rounded facility. And I don't even like the word facility. It makes it sound kind of sterile, but a home. And we've had to be that because when they come to us, their medical needs are unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Take a young woman, 18 years old, been trafficked, let's say, for 15 years, on the average forced to the demands of a man 10 to 15 times a night, every single day. Imagine what the condition her body is in, the mental state, the therapies. It's hard to explain. It's hard to define. They all come. They all have their own story.
It'd be like trying to help overnight somebody who's been in a prison or war camp for 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't trust you. Why should they? They don't trust anybody.
Right.
And so when they show up, whether we take them off an airplane, whether we pick them up at a hospital, you know, they look at us like, well, I'll come because it's the only option offered, but I don't trust you and I don't trust what I'm about to experience. And, you know, that's our first step is just building that level of trust.
What's
with
in
them.
It for you, right? That's, I mean, because their whole life is transactional.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things that really stood out to me, something Lowell said, it was like a few months ago. about like how people, a lot of people, I think the general public just can't, and I struggled with myself understanding if you finally can get away from your pimp, how, why would you go back? Like a normal person, like when I say normal, like they would think, well, I would run out the gas station, I would call someone, but they have nothing. They don't have someone to call.
Right.
They don't. And Lowell said something that I just still keep thinking about. He and his son Carson, I think, they had went on a rescue, and I believe it was in Sturgis. I don't know if you can name drop, but it was somewhere on a big bike rally. And he said they were able to locate the girl that was missing. And he said they were like, it was in a crowd of people. And he said, we're not going to cause a scene, but we're going to let her know we're safe. And he said he went up to her and he kind of tapped her on the shoulder and interject if I'm getting
the story
wrong.
On.
And he said, we to save you, your dad is Bill or whatever. Your dad's name, your name is such and such, and we're here to, we're going to save you. And he said they were trying to be like inconspicuous and be discreet at this event, you know, and because they don't know where her pimp or John or.
Right.
And he said she turned, whipped around and pretty loudly said, who are you? I don't trust you. She said, the reason I'm here is because of somebody that said that to me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here.
Sure.
And it made just such an impression on me because it doesn't always just work to, like you would, people would think, well, you could just tell them, you know, we can save you. But it's so much deeper than that, that they don't totally understand, you know, that.
Right.
That what's abusive,
happening? Abusive environments, abusive. I mean, there are women in abusive marriages. There are husbands in abuse. There are kids in abusive families that go back. You know, there's emotional strings that have been tied up in knots. And it's hard to extricate all of that.
Yeah. Yep. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Our guests are Lowell Hochhalter with the Lifeguard Group and Lenore Bear. And we will be back after these words. Arnie, we are back with Lenore and Lowell.
So, Lowell, what do you got coming up for training for people that have now listened and they want to get involved? How do people contribute? You know, what's the website? You know, give us all that information so that our listeners can link up with the program.
Absolutely. You can connect with us on our website at thelifeguardgroup.org. If you're interested more on our safe house operation, you go to crookedtreeranch.com, and that shows a little bit more. And there's links to each
on the other site.
Yeah. There's donate links on both of those. There'll be a specific, starting Thanksgiving Day, there'll be a specific link to the match to be a part of that. Our goal is to fill that match in the first week. And then, I don't know, maybe Bears will say, well, we just have to do another one. You know, somebody will step up and rematch. We've got a lot of trainings that are going on. You can see that on our Recognize and Respond link on our website.
Yeah,
we have a school assembly program that we do that brings prevention and awareness called the Lifeline Project. You know, in Montana, just through this last legislative session, mandated that education happens in all of our schools.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you're not going to out-legislate crime. You can make all the laws you want.
Right.
It just takes somebody to take some action. So, I mean, we're working hard. So if you're a school administrator, you're a teacher, coach, you know, get us in your schools, get us in front of your students. We've got to engage this generation, or we'll never win this war. We've got to engage this generation. And everybody can be involved. Everybody can be involved in one way or another. Yes, we'll take your money, but what I'd really love is your heart.
Great.
Yeah. Lenore, anything that you'd like to finish off, say goodbye with?
We're just excited about this campaign that we're going to do with you guys. And we just hope that the general Missoula community and surrounding area and anyone else who's listening just wants to join us in helping to fight this fight to end human trafficking.
Thank you. The Lifeguard Group. Bare Concrete and Excavation, working together to really move this initiative forward. We're glad that you guys came aboard. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Right. Yes, thank you, Lenore. Thank you.
All right, Arnold. See you next Sunday.
See you next Sunday.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.